Spirits of French Lick is proud to introduce the Lee Sinclair 4-Grain Bottled and Bond Bourbon. This 4-year-aged, double-pot distilled, non-chill-filtered bourbon has creamy, round, and lifting notes with caramel and vanilla, followed by apple, mint, graham cracker, and ginger, as well as cardamom. The finish is slightly French walnut, resolving the sweet, fruity, almost ground cherry and white pepper. Our spirits are available for tasting and purchase inside the French Lick Winery and Distillery. Spirits of French Lick. Respect the grain. Please enjoy responsibly.
What's up, Scotchy Bourbon Boys fans? This is Alan Bishop of If You Have Ghosts, You Have Everything. You may know me better as Indiana's Alchemist of the Black Forest, but if you're at all interested in the Fortean, high strangeness, the paranormal, and the unexplained, then you should tune into my new podcast, If You Have Ghosts, You Have Everything. Available now wherever you get your podcast, including Spotify, Google Podcast, and Amazon.
Scotchy Bourbon Boys. We are live from Mingo Creek Craft Distillery today with Jim Hoff. And you guys do the introductions with everybody else.
I'm Ellen Hoff, Mom.
I'm Kevin Hoff, the youngest son.
And I'm Rob Hoff.
Welcome. Welcome. Well, wait. We'll welcome ourselves. Me and Roxy are here. They've taken us in at their distillery. We're upstairs in the awesome room.
The Founders Room.
Yes. Yes. And all of their single barrels and their other past things are here with us. So that's
the
one
museum.
Of the, yes. Yes. I want to give a shout out to Kenny Fuller of the Luca Mariano Old Americana Band for doing our theme song. Yeah. I mean, I had a guy, one of the guys that in our area that kind of was like a local podcaster too, and we were kind of cool, and then we weren't, but then we kind of buried the hatchet, and then he came up to me at the Bourbon Festival, and he's like, damn, man, that theme song you've gone, it's so catchy. So obviously he listens to what he sees us what we do, and I have to admit, sometimes I really think that theme song is on a level of way better than any podcast I've ever done, but we're getting there. Now, I will tell you, we did bring the bourbon balls for you guys to sample, and one of my favorite things is, and I think also my wife's, is to see people's faces when they taste it first. So, and know that we want to make it for a gift shop somewhere. We've had inquiries from a lot of different places, but nobody's actually taking a chunk off of it, so yeah. But I'm not putting no pressure. But once you taste it,
none taken.
Let me know because we have.
Can
no
we
problem.
Start now? Yeah, right.
Yeah, for sure. Pull them up. Pull them. Yeah, we got the.
Wow.
Do you have a recommendation for which one to try?
Yeah.
The white chocolate fan.
That's what I was eyeing up.
You are a white. Look
at you. Well, the bourbon balls are outstanding on the white chocolate.
So, and lately we've been having a white chocolate melting problem. Like the white chocolate won't melt. Now, we looked into it. So, this next batch that we're going to make. Now, this is made with early times bottled in bond. Now, The only reason it's made with Early Times Bottling and Bomb, you were talking about your cranberry
right.
thing that you had on that drink. That yes, it has those flavors. I've used that for Wassail. You guys are familiar with Wassail,
oh, yeah.
And so we would. And,
oh my goodness!
Yes. See,
Wait a second.
I love,
what am I? This is the white filling. What is this?
Wow.
Oh my gosh.
Roxy.
Heaven, it's heaven.
Yes, Roxy. So this
butter, powdered sugar, and pecans that we soak for weeks and
this
weeks
was
and weeks
16
at a time.
Weeks
I think
week.
That was 16 weeks. And the Early Times really, there's certain bourbons that are better than others, but really just like for the basic.
So maybe after the podcast, we have to talk.
Yeah, because we can.
But we do.
I mean, I like where you guys are located because I don't, because we don't add things to.
Preserve it.
Yes, there's no preservatives in it. It's chocolate.
Yep.
Right.
We use a specific chocolate. We did a ton of research. And
they would have to be hand-delivered.
Yes, because I wouldn't want to ship them and have them melt or whatever. You know, there's a lot of stuff. But overall, once they make it, we always felt that in certain, we could do smaller packs or whatever, they would just fly off the... And if you supply the bourbon, it greatly reduces my cost. You know what I mean?
Interesting.
We happen to have bourbon.
We have
bourbon.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, yeah, you could just... You wouldn't even have to bottle it. Just send it up in bags.
Yeah. Oh, they were delicious.
Delicious.
Oh, fantastic. Wow.
Yeah, we worked long and hard to perfect... A recipe.
Wow. Yeah, it's cool that she starts.
Yeah. Yeah. Shows.
Well, yeah, we both we hand roll them,
yeah.
And it was my idea to do them, but it was her tweaking and her culinary thing, you know.
And we can't just have regular old.
And we get way better at it, you know. We can really get where it used to take us a good. 6 hours, we got it down to like 3.
Yeah.
You know, just as far as rolling and all that
yeah.
kind of
yeah.
stuff.
But I've gotten specific down to the ounce for ingredients.
Oh, yeah.
You never want to take a good bourbon and ruin it, and you guys really respect the bourbon. These balls respect the bourbon.
Believe it or not, good bourbon. I've used French Lick, I've used other bourbons, mm-hmm. and good bourbon, it changes the actual overall
absolutely.
Flavor.
Absolutely.
There's, you know, I'll be honest, the Early Times is a lower priced one for, you know, the base, and it just, you could taste the bourbon. But that's what, you know, we were down in Kentucky, and we're both like, this sucks. It's not a bourbon ball. It's a candy.
Yeah.
I mean, I could go buy candy.
No
anywhere.
Respect.
You know,
right.
but then you find out. But you also find out some of the people that are making them to do it, and they're doing it themselves. Okay.
Yeah.
They don't have a liquor license. So what we wanted to do is partner with the distillery because you guys have a liquor license and you could sell it all day long. You just got to make sure you're not selling it to children. You know, that's
right.
the key because that you have a couple of those, and I think you actually can get buzzed. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, so we're here, and I just want to...
Can I have another one?
Have as many
as
you want. Yeah, we brought 2 boxes for you guys.
That's good. Well, that'll be gone by the end of the day.
Yeah. So what brought Roxy and myself here is that I was talking with Alan Bishop, and you guys had done a distillery talk with Alan and Christy, and I think it's not, my names aren't my thing. It takes me a while to just.
Me
Ellen.
Too. Yes.
Yes. See? It's not there yet.
Not
there
yet.
Rob.
That's Kevin. No,
Kevin.
No,
Kevin. Rob. Yes, Kevin. Okay, so I have a worker named Kevin, so that's going to be Rob.
It's hard
to
work with
yeah,
that.
Yeah, but
it's
Rob's
so
damn good looking. I'm going to
it's
easy
to remember.
Yeah. There you go. Anyways, but I was talking with Alan, and I said to him, I honestly said to him, what is the best spirit that you've tasted, other than, you know, he does what it is. What have you tasted? Because he puts stuff out all the time that he's like, thank you for this, send it to me this. And he's like, it's Liberty Pole. It's like, you got to get there. You got to talk, because we had Jim, and he's doing something special there. And so I really respect Alan. I've moonshined with him. I've gone out into the backwoods, and he's done stuff and been part of the Alan Bishop experience. So I really expect, I respect him as a distiller, plus what he's doing and the stuff that I've tasted there. We've done a barrel pick there on the William Dalton Weeded, as you can tell. I absolutely love your Weedens. This in this glass. Oh, my God. You guys. Now, I do have to admit, now that I've done this for so long, I can tell the difference between pot still and column still whiskey. Mm-hmm. Now, really good column still whiskey still is fantastic, but they have to do a lot more in maturation, in my opinion. And like Alan explains all the time, that he doesn't need a... he can have a controlled, not outdoor rickhouse, because he doesn't need the barrel for the flavor as much. But then you guys have a great rickhouse back there, and you can combine the two to get the flavors, you know. Talk about now, when you where you were, and now that you're in your new facility, and this facility is fantastic. We had a tour right before. Just talk about what it's like, you know, setting up your own facility and then having all the vision come together. And you, it's fairly new, right? It was July when you moved in?
4 months. July 15th. Yep.
So
yep.
Now that you have some time to, you know, think back, I mean, just talk about what it's like to be able to do this.
Well, you know, I'm glad we didn't do this on day one. You know, we had over 7 years of distilling in a space that wasn't designed for distilling. So we kind of really understood how we could improve it and how we could make it efficient and how we could make it, you know, really make it work for us. And that's the beauty of a new build, is that we, you know, these guys were able to, you know, kind of design this facility for efficiency. And it's, you know, and it's, what do you think? It's working out. What do you think?
Hit our stride in 4 months, right?
Yeah, I'd say so. It's really nice whenever you have an absolute blank slate to be able to pick where you want to put things and how you want your workflow to go. And more importantly is from the old place, we know what parts of the workflow we really care about that equate to final flavor, right? And be able to preserve everything about that.
So. New place after learning so much. And then now, all I can tell you is I've been at a lot of different distilleries. And well, we're sitting here right now. You guys are fairly comfortable.
Guys,
I've seen, I've been in where I come in, where there's something happening, and that comfort level's not quite there. Now, I don't know if it's a, we're on a Sunday morning and you guys are actually getting a chance to rest. So it's like, you're just like looking at me and going, thank you for this, because this is normally insane. You know,
whatever, good thing you weren't here yesterday.
Yeah.
But I do want to just circle back. You know, Alan is a very respected guy in the industry. And you know, I'm blown away to hear that he specifically told you to come here. Alan, thank you. We're honored. You know, it's really cool that
really cool.
You know, our you know, word of us is kind of getting out there. We've intentionally remained very hyper-local for 7 years. We're trying to get older whiskey, so we haven't really tested dipped our toes in distribution. We're staying really close to home. So thank you, Alan. That's a real honor to hear that he talked to you.
Well, and then you say that on one breath, but what's back there, you know, what we got right over there, it's like, you know, you're getting ready.
Absolutely.
Like you're going to be, you want to be in distribution, but once again, what you're going to bring to, what you want to bring to the market is some fantastic whiskey. And so far.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
But you still loading them and heating them up with all your single shit you've been dropping. You feel me? Loading them up on. It only takes structure. And you know, just paying attention to the climate of the game.
Yeah.
Know what I mean?
So do your homies got a role in your little, you mean?
Yeah, we all artists over here, man. I'm trying to get them on there. We all artists, man. We gonna have this like,
bro, me and my man Kai, we be like, I don't know, we play with this shit
don't
right
play
now.
With this shit.
I gotta lie, we play with this shit right now for real.
Don't play with it. Take that shit serious.
Damn. I just was like, I told her, I'm like, we gotta figure out how I bring back as many of these bottles because it's gonna be good. And she's like, you know, it's okay.
You can always come back.
But two, yeah, and actually, the drive between Ohio and here on 30,
it really is.
Oh my God, yeah. It's just you're going path. Through the, yeah. But it never gets too like Maker's Mark-ish. You know, you're never down one lane highways with two way, you know, going. So it's like perfect where you're located, and then you are. I mean, I don't know what to say. I love because I come from advertising. I come from a commercial art background. So we're driving through all these little towns and everything, and then we come to where you're at. Store to a like the Hollywood Casino. I mean, for what? Talk about people who want to spill out into the. You're next door. I mean, the Hollywood, and then what? There was one other.
A Tanger Outlet Mall across the street.
That's what I said. I said to her, we got to go to the. It's been so long. And you guys saw my new bomber jacket, right?
Yeah.
I'm like, my first bomber jacket, and I was like 165 pounds at the time. I bought it at Banana Republic, and it didn't fit. I'm like, let's just go there afterwards and just see what they got. Because the most they have is XL. You guys could shop there. But I can't, so. Yeah. So okay. So let's talk about your. I mean, I'm blown away a little bit at. Okay. So you got the high rye there, the stuff that you're just getting ready to bottle. So you want us to sample that?
Absolutely.
But you got the two wheated I just tasted. So you've been doing wheated for a while. And then we got the Barrel Thief peated bourbon. I've barrel thieved peated single malt, peated American single malt from whatever, but I never got to taste that peated bourbon. And what I was really blown away at is I didn't get that earthy peat taste. I got a char smoke taste, which takes like that bourbon and just like you smoked the bourbon, not peated it and made it earthy. And as I said before, it tastes like shit. But, you know, so talk about how many different things you got going, and then with the new Rick House and what you got, how you're, you know, organizing those things and what you do on a weekly basis.
You know, we have, I guess, right, guys, we have four major SKUs. Three, corn is a, so we do a wheated bourbon, a straight rye, and a peated bourbon. Those are our three, and we... Over the course of the year, we dedicate about 25-30% of the year to each of those three main SKUs. That gives us a little bit of time to experiment, and our ethos is to experiment and play, but only in the whiskey space. So you mentioned the high rye bourbon. So we have a great, I think, backstory on that. You want to try that?
Yeah.
So as a proud Pennsylvania whiskey distillery, right? Rye is our heritage. It's Pennsylvania's whiskey. So we looked at how a lot of Kentucky distilleries produced rye, and it was a barely legal rye. It was 51% rye. So that offended us, we like to say.
Age on this?
That is, so that's 4 summers. It's almost 4 years old. But we decided to turn the tables on, you know, the Kentucky rye and make a Pennsylvania bourbon. So this is 51% Bloody Butcher corn. So it's the bare minimum to be a bourbon with 40% rye. So it's a very high rye bourbon. We like to think it's a Pennsylvania bourbon because of that high rye content.
And then talk about your barrel entry. So what do you pull it off the, like, what do you pull your hearts off the still? I learned this just this week. We were talking about what, you know, because I put out the rules of bourbon. And what do you pull your hearts off at, and what do you put it? What do you put this in the barrel at? What's your barrel entry?
Our hearts are normally so the aggregate proof. So I always tell people, if you start tasting off the still with us,
it's different every single minute as you go along.
I believe that the aggregate at the end of the day is 10 times better than any individual, portion of that run. I don't even really know that well off the top of my head. I'll say 150. We start collecting around 150. And
10% then, under what you can.
Yes, yeah. And then we'll run it down to a little bit under 90. But for us, we really track that aggregate proof once the still run is done. And these days, we're right around 131 proof. 130
okay.
and a half, 131.
Okay. So technically, what you got to get to the one. Now,
yes.
Now, normally, a lot of people put it in at 125. You know, that's yes. the highest that yields the most. But yep. you guys are going in at?
We go into 108. Yep. And that's kind of been the sweet spot for us over the last couple of years. We've ranged from, we were at 115 for a while. We've put in a couple at 103, 104. Up in at where we seem to get to. We're big fans of that like leather. We're big fans of that like leather soft oak flavor, and right around that 108 number is kind of where it's derived, at least for us, the best. So,
yeah. That's the high rye. So
that's the high rye.
So this is a single barrel. We're naming this one Barrel Candy. Because we get a whole lot of sweet tarts, a whole lot of Sour Patch Kids.
It tastes like candy.
Yeah.
That's right up there.
That's right
what
up
I was there. Tasting off that 95.5. I get the sweet tarts on the I get finish. Do you like the finish? I pull a ton. Fuck. That's delicious.
Thank you.
Exciting.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Yeah. I guess I'm pulling. I get front palate.
This is an interesting one.
Front palate is caramel.
Yeah.
It goes mid palate chocolate. But then it, instead of hot pepper, it goes like you said. Sweet tart,
sweet tart,
like a tartness,
like a tartness.
And then what's really freaking cool? What's a proof?
This is 113, I believe, in that ballpark.
So if anybody wants, so it goes in at 108 and comes out at 113.
Yeah, we raised.
So just think about that. We're in Pennsylvania, and everybody talks about Kentucky, and they talk about, and we're a little bit further north happening. But you still added that 108 to 113, and where were you aging? What part of the rickhouse?
So this guy was aged before we had a rickhouse. So the majority of this was aged at our old distillery,
just right in the distillery control.
Yeah, and then we had an on-site storage and an off-site storage, and the majority of these saw back corner of on-site storage.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
What I believe so, would be equivalent to like a first or second story.
So
first
you,
or second story.
So aging with the humidity and not so much temperature change because it's on site, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I get when it's cold, but it still was on site, so there it wasn't like having it in a rickhouse where it gets freezing and hot.
So based on both of our old store sites, our basement saw way bigger temperature fluctuations than our off-site did. Off-site was a bigger building that always kind of sat just about the same. Where just whenever we were working downstairs, we had a chiller that was on putting heat out. We had a garage door that was open letting cold in. So just based on the natural workflow.
The normal northern.
We would cool that basement down big time and then turn the chiller on and heat it up big time. And the fact that basement cycled so much was kind of the driving force behind.
Putting up this rickhouse and letting it cycle. We wanted to recreate that, but just with the ability to store way more than what we could in that previous basement. So I'm looking forward to, like, now that we've met you, and it's just this, whatever, but 5 years from now, it's like, come here and see what, because that's the one thing. I've met a lot of distillers, and I let a lot of people who have been in the industry forever. And Greg Schneider of Chicken Cock Whiskey, as a master distiller of that, he's just got a history of everything. And he gets into like the intricacies of distilling and what comes off and everything. And you guys are doing something similar to that, I would love for him to be able to taste what you're doing. But, you know, it's just like, it's so much fun doing this. They're the variables are like off the charts.
It's a whiskey playground.
So what? So let's just get into really whiskey nerd shit, right? We're talking about yeast strain. How, what do you guys do for the? What are you using? How are you doing it?
Yeah. Well, so right now we use dry yeast from Wilderness Trail. We've been incredibly
iced and
iced. You can't go wrong.
Yeah, we've been incredibly impressed with the quality of this yeast. So that's it's a pretty standard. We've always kind of called it ale yeast. I think a better term for it would be a more standard American distiller's yeast. But for us, we're looking for the two things we like to do here. We really like to build flavor, right? And I always say, if we're giving tours here, between heating up and boiling in your cooker, you know, and then cooling down, and then boiling in your still, separating out components, all that is meant to break down and lose flavor. And I feel like you really know what you're doing if you're able to put corn in rye
where it's cooked, fermented, distilled twice,
and you're still able to taste what you made it out of. Right? To me, that's a step that and then we particularly love yeast that give us flavors on top of those grain flavors, those fruity, those florals. We had a bourbon out of Iron Root down in Texas that tastes like key lime pie, right? And so we've internally started to refer to those as tertiary flavors, right? So you got your primary, your corns, your oaks, your cinnamons, and if you're able to coax some of those tertiary flavors,
terroir.
Yeah, you're killing it. Yeah,
Pennsylvania. And honestly, when it comes to Pennsylvania, when you talk about what's been happening in the Pennsylvania's like right now coming online, you know, Kentucky started it. There's no doubt with all the writers and the in what history there, it was started as far as this boom. But then as it comes out more and more, there's, you got your Colorado whiskeys, you've got your Texas whiskeys, and you've got, you know, Wisconsin. I've been to Wisconsin. It's not so much, but they're there. Ohio's starting, but now, I mean, Alan told me straight up. He goes, you need to get to Pennsylvania. And I'm like, I'm going, Kentucky's 5 hours, Wisconsin's 7. I mean, my Ohio guys are good, you know, I'm doing that. But Pennsylvania's only 2. And then I'm like,
well, you could drive to the other side of it.
Well, but yeah, but we all know the other side. That side's not. This is the good side. We're on the good side.
We think so, but I'll tell you, that's a great point.
Indiana too.
Indiana, but Pennsylvania is making some great whiskey. There is great whiskey being made all across the state.
And you guys are honoring your history because, like I was telling my wife when we came down, we talked about that. The whiskey revolution,
absolutely,
was Pennsylvania. And whiskey was being, and she's like, why? Well, I'm like, it's so connected with New York. So when all the distillers were coming, they all moved this way and they went to Pennsylvania, not to Kentucky. The whiskey revolution drove them to Kentucky so that they could barter and trade. And that's where Kentucky really came into the, not that nobody, everybody was distilling everywhere. I mean, there's no doubt, but Pennsylvania had, there was a reason why they came to Pennsylvania for this because that's where it was strong. And then same thing dealing with Michter's. We just tasted at the Bourbon Festival with Dan McKee and Andrea Wilson a Michter's that was done in 1972 in a little carafe. And we tasted it with them there because Nash got it from them. And it was, the Pennsylvania location. And it was fantastic. They loved it. They had never tasted anything, you know, what like that. And it's the same thing. So when Alan's like, you gotta do Pennsylvania, I'm like, yeah, that's a lot closer. And I, like he said, did tell me that this would be a really good whiskey. You guys sent him the samples. And I have to agree, because I know Alan's palate, it's similar, and I love pot still, and you guys got this pot still at a level that's fantastic.
Well, this rye that we just tasted is
high
bourbon, very complex for, you don't have those overwhelming rye notes that sort of turned me off. The finish on it, a lot of that candy sweetness, but sort of like a honeydew melon or a little bit of, you know, some floral. Also interesting, right? First you sniff it and you get a wonderful taste. Like, oh, it's a little hot, but not so hot. You know, wipes your esophagus out, right? Yep. Yep. We do have friends that really enjoy the hotter the better, but I like it so it's enjoyable, but not so hot that you can't taste your taste buds anymore.
Here's a question.
And then those great sweet notes on the finish, so very enjoyable.
Great question. I've always been these proof hogs. People who love high proof. Yeah. People who love high proof. Don't you feel they burn their taste buds completely out and they can't taste anything? And when they hit that high proof, they actually taste. And so, you know, I respect somebody who can get flavors from a 80 proof bourbon. And, you know, I just, me and you grew up in the 80s and whatever. 80 proof bourbon? Was considered a high proof. You know, you talk to, I talked to Fred No, and you talked to Jimmy Russell, and you hear what Elmer T. Lee said. They didn't expect anybody to drink it barrel proof. They said, you get it, proof it down yourself, and drink it what you think is the best way. They did not ever foresee this part of what's happening in the whiskey industry.
That's like, if we pull a single barrel, whenever we're sitting there, because the stuff that gets blended, it always goes down to 92. That's kind of our standard proof. We're determining whether or not to leave it at barrel proof or proof it down. Most of the time it's at barrel proof, but I feel like our opinion here at Liberty Bowl is that at the higher proofs, those like predominant two to three flavors are strong and I won't say overwhelming, very whelming in a very good way. And then as you proof it down, you get more flavors, but you also start to water down some of those top three flavors. So it's just a
balance and a 100%. Really good, and the fact that he's saying that, you should make you like really proud, because there is a balance as a distiller. And look, palates are everything. You can produce the best distillate ever and be perfect. If you don't understand the market and you don't understand the different sects of whiskey drinkers, you have to decide where you're going. I mean, I'm just going to tell you, Rebel 100 is a great whiskey if you're going to be at a concert and you want to get bombed. It's got a one singular flavor, it's got enough proof, and it's a party whiskey. Yeah. There's all different types, but if you don't understand that as a distiller, then it's hard to run a distillery. But also, all the great distillers know, as they come down, it'll hit a sweet spot, and they'll know when it goes to the next level, it went away, that's where it should go. And that's when you get all that complexity. Water, I mean, every single distillery tour you go on, get the little dropper. They say, drop it in, see how much it opens it up. But convince the general public that's a real thing, right?
and I think, you know, that's the beauty of our entry proof, you know, 107, 108. Even when we produce our core SKUs, 92 proof, we're not adding an incredible amount of water. If we went in at 125 and tried to get that down to 92 proof, we would have to add so much water that we're really reducing
the water has to be at a level. I mean, you just don't, that much water that can affect the taste, like you said.
Sure.
Right?
So we're not diluting a great deal. We're our entry proof and our climate, we're never going to hit those hazmat levels. We're never going to bottle a 135 proof whiskey. It's just not going to happen with our entry proof.
You just nailed it. Look at, he just said, wait. So now he's going, okay. He's like, I'm going to take it off at 120. I'm going to take it off at 160. I'm going to put it at 125, and I'm going to put it on the top shelf, and let's see.
Okay, maybe
we've had a couple of sneaky high bad barrels that spike, but probably not 135. I'd agree with that.
Yeah. I mean, hazmat is 140. Yeah. So, you know, that's that. There's your challenge for the next 20 years. Yeah, 140, one of them.
Yeah. But you know what? It's funny. You talk about consumers, though, and I mean, we see it. I mean, you know, they're across the spectrum. You know, people that think 92 is too high, and that's our lowest proof. So, you know, to have the single barrels.
But 92 is too high, your lowest price. That's the general drinking public that thinks 90. I mean,
you can
so you've got these great people up here who are like sitting there at all those barrels, but they're like 5% of that market, which 5% of the market for you guys is a huge part of the market. But what I really love, what you guys are talking about, and I can't wait till we're finished, and Alan here makes me a cocktail because cocktails, bourbon cocktails. That to me, they've been dragging behind, but they're now right starting. The last year or two, they're starting to get their due, where they're just going straight forward into the mass market. And you guys have to see that here because people are excited about the bourbon cocktail. So you talk about your bourbon cocktail.
She's the best. I think she's the best. I think she's the best anyone around.
You did.
Well, I think when you are a whiskey distiller, I thought it would be easy. I would just call bartenders and I would ask them for recipes. And come to find out that whiskey was really not... People do not drink it in cocktails. That a bartender knows everything about tequila and rum cocktails and vodka cocktails. But when you say, so, what's a bourbon cocktail? They go, well, Manhattans are great. Okay, I know that. So
old fashioned Manhattans, and then it was, what the hell?
Right. And I have to say, I had the privilege of meeting David Wunderich, who, as I've read his book about the history of whiskey cocktails and all cocktails. And when I met with him, he said, the one thing that you need to do as a whiskey cocktail crafter is you have to remember that the whiskey has the characteristics that vodka will never have, that rum will never have. So you just respond to whatever it is in the whiskey and add something that augments the flavor of that whiskey. For me, it's been seasonal, so I know that apple cider's available in the fall. So we try to do something with apple cider in the fall. And I've seen it happen over the last 8 years that we've been trying to develop cocktails. I've seen bartenders begin to come on board with this, too. You see it, especially with our corn whiskey. Corn whiskey's beginning to replace rum. And I love rum in a good rum cocktail.
You should have been a pirate.
But I find that you take that rum cocktail and you modify it with corn whiskey, and there's a little bit more characteristic in it.
So you can make a mojito?
We do.
Corn whiskey?
Well, we...
I'm all on board for that.
We have one of our famous cocktails is the Mingo-rita. We do a Mingo-rita. That is... And Rob will pull the rye right off the still. And our rye coming off the still tastes a lot like silver tequila, white tequila. Close enough. There's grape.
Not right off.
Right. So we're able to take that and mix that with a lime and a beautiful flavor.
You mean the bourbon? I mean, whether it's corn whiskey or not, it's still bourbon, right? Or did you age it in used barrels?
So I think what you have to do.
It's like corn.
Yeah. I think what we've done here, I mean, I thank you boys for your compliments, but I think what we've done here is just try to make it so that the whiskey tastes good. So on a Monday morning, it is very common for me to come into work knowing that I'm preparing. We switch out 4 seasonal cocktails every month, and it's very common for me to come in here and try a new cocktail and have the boys taste it. Are you getting the whiskey? How is it coming forward? And I always believe that when a customer says to me, I can't get this cocktail anywhere else, it means that they have learned to appreciate our whiskey.
So what I see coming, and this is, it's the used barrel.
It's
So you just poured me some corn whiskey. It's what's the 100% or is it
90-10
with barley. Right. And that helps with the fermentation. 100%. I get that. So I've had mellow corn. This is not mellow corn. Mellow corn, you can taste the living shit out of the mellow. Now, how long is your corn whiskey been aged?
That's Between 3 and 4 years. Used barrel. Used barrel.
So there's an aspect. So a cool thing. I don't know if you guys know Turner Wathen out of Louisville, but he is the nephew of Charles Wathen of Wathen, and he didn't want to do whiskey. So he's going to be on our podcast on Tuesday. And he basically decided he's been buying rum, Foursquare rum and Barbados aged with rum, and then putting it in high-end whiskey barrels. But he doesn't... It's like, you know how when you put a whiskey in a finishing barrel and you want to still have the whiskey, you just want to finish it and you can't go too long? Well, he's taking those rum barrels and going too long in the whiskey barrels, so the whiskey takes over the rum aspect. But he's got them in Pappy barrels, Weller, Woodford Double O, and it's like, for instance, rum. I love rum. Before I was into whiskey, I always say I would have been a great pirate because I can drink a whole bottle of Bacardi Lyman rum in the night, and the next morning I never have a problem. Whiskey's not the same. If you go too much on one way or another, the next day I've learned now really good whiskey, like what you're doing, aged and everything. You know, that's a different story, but. But that's what he does. And this right here is on the level of what he's doing. Because as far as corn whiskey, I don't taste the yellow corn taste to it. I taste
a little bit. Enough to give it that sweetness.
But it's the bourbon aspect of the corn that you're picking.
So you made a comment earlier about flavoring grains and you know, that's so 90. That's 90% bloody butcher corn. That's the other thing I don't think we've really talked about yet.
Do you grow it?
But we get it from a Pennsylvania farm. Nevada does.
That's his first name. His literal first name is Nevada.
Nevadamese, he's
in Pennsylvania.
Yeah,
in Pennsylvania. So it's just like everybody's saying, they go, Nevada? Are we going gambling? No, wait, we could go down the street and go gambling.
Pennsylvania farmer named Nevada. Who's a good friend, who has a good buddy named Austin. Who also lives in Pennsylvania.
My head spins when they come, like, wait.
And they drive in here and they unload, and then they sleep here on the couch.
That makes sense. They want to taste what you're doing, right?
So bloody butcher corn, if you've never had bourbon or whiskey made from bloody butcher, it's a heritage grain. It is very flavorful. It's earthy. It's
but
oily.
If you don't know what you're doing, you can make it taste like shit.
Absolutely.
It's a balance that you have to know, because I've had bloody butcher corn from other distilleries and not been a fan.
Thank you.
Alan said a similar thing.
No.
It's hard to...
I'm not... I've never, ever named the distillery. I'm not mean. It's just so when Alan was talking, like you said, I knew when I came here I would love your stuff, and I do. So keep talking.
No, but our weeded bourbon, right? Wheat is typically referred to as the flavoring grain. Right, because it's corn. Number two, dent corn. Has no flavor. Right, so rye or wheat in a bourbon they're called the flavoring grain. Right, we think our bloody butchers are flavoring grain. The wheat and the rye are
the wheat and the rye
adjuncts. They're additives. I like to think of our wheat of bourbon. The wheat is more of a palate. The wheat grain, right? It softens that bourbon up a little bit. I think our bourbons and our corn whiskeys, the bloody butcher is the star of the show. And that's what we want. As Rob said, we want to push those flavors through into the distillate.
I got the finish. It was gone. It's fruity.
It's
fruity. Like you guys understand, it's like Scotch and Irish whiskey. They've been doing this for... You could take Scotch back to like 1400 years, but let's just say 800 to be when it was consistent throughout. And we're only talking a couple, 250, 300 for whiskey. But when you're talking about bourbon, when it was actually defined, was probably right before or after Prohibition, because there was so much whiskey, even though the barrel... So it had to be new oak barrels. That was 1964 that it had to be new. Before that, you could use a used oak barrel that had pickles in it, and then you char it, and then it would be fine, and that would be bourbon. It was coming out of Bourbon, Kentucky. Then it went down to Bourbon Street. There's a whole mint. There's so many different things. But at the same time, the new, when they, I mean, you have to give that Congress credit, because we live in Canton, Ohio. If Congress would have said vacuums being made by Hoover had to be made in Canton, Ohio, there'd still be a Hoover vacuum company there. The fact that they said bourbon had to be made in the USA, they saved the industry. Otherwise, we'd be drinking Chinese bourbon right now. It's just that simple.
It's not that good.
I didn't say it. No, oh, okay. It would be shit. But you know what I mean? But people would drink it. I mean, all I got to say is Barton's goes to Costco. I mean, that in itself, you know, and then half the people are like, well, that's $17.92. I'm like, why would they sell it for $18 when they're selling it for $36 on the shelf? Why would they take a hit like that? They wouldn't. They had other distillate, and they said, but at the same time, that's not what bourbon drinkers, I mean, your history of Pennsylvania and what you have here, I love history. When I sit down on my back porch and I have a fire, I don't want to drink a Costco bourbon because I got a deal. I'm willing to pay a little bit because you guys have taken the time and effort to put so much into this. Your souls are in it. I mean, I'm an artist. I understand when I do a painting, well, distilling similar to doing art because there's so much in it. And you guys know when it's not, we trust you when you do something and it didn't go right, that you're going to do what you need to do to make it so that it's good. I mean, but not every single barrel is good. I mean, I know that. You know, we've got a distillery in I'm not going to say in Ohio, that wasn't producing very good stuff, but they were really good at marketing. And then they got a really good team. And then all of a sudden their stuff got really good. Same distillate, good team, good people. And then they got rid of the team and sold, and it's just back to being okay. So you guys, you know, what you do, and I'm so happy that you guys have them. So he's married. You got kids?
We both do, actually. They're 19 days apart.
One year old daughters, both of us.
So palate testers.
Oh, very nice. Awesome. Very nice.
So what do you guys have coming up in the future? Where do you have things in the works or in the work?
In terms of whiskey?
In terms of whiskey?
Yeah.
I mean, I think...
Everything.
Yeah.
Our key is keep focusing on making good whiskey.
I think that. Well, go ahead.
Yeah. The big thing for us is we want to keep fantastic whiskey at $45 to $50 a bottle that people can get used to drinking, and we want to become everyday drinking whiskey for the people.
That's kind of the goal of the next five years.
And in the meantime, keep rolling the single barrel train because we have so much fun doing that.
We'll probably never stop that.
Well, that, okay, so your guys' brains. I'm going to disagree. I love the fact that you want to be in Pennsylvania, but yeah, this doesn't belong just in Pennsylvania. So the first place, I'll introduce you to the right people, the next door neighbor, Ohio. Go to Ohio first, the fourth largest bourbon market. Get in there because they do a good job in
OHLQ.
And I mean, I know people in OHLQ.
Yeah.
And they switched state from being something negative to being a positive there. They've done, Jim, and I know Ann Dimmick, and good things, and they've done things because they love bourbon, and the first thing I'll do is tell...
Yeah, they make some great single barrels and
barrels. I heard you pick on one of your recent podcasts.
They did a
rabbit hole pick, and then the team that went down picked great barrels, but they didn't realize what the price would be for Cave Hill single barrel. And it's like, now it just sits there, and I really want to taste it. I know it's good, but at $159, when I love the Cave Hill at $69 or $71 or or whatever.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. I just like, you do realize it's not that much better.
Yeah. So we just poured for you our straight rye.
It's 4 years old.
So we got to do that.
So we're going to call this one, you know, we name all of our single barrels. So we're going to call this one the Grapes of Rye. Because we think there's a real,
we think there's a
kind of flavor note that kind of.
And talk about that, because I really do think that's. No, take it. I really do think what. So sometimes your palate picks. Now the corn on that last sip.
Well, you can smell it.
I got the corn on that on the corn whiskey.
Yeah.
That was. Where's? I just needed butter.
Yeah.
On that last one. Yeah. So before drinking it, I was getting subtleties, but then I got that finish. Like, it just, I. So do you guys find sometimes, like, when you're sipping whiskey, it's one thing, but if you take a full swallow, it's another thing. If you do the Kentucky Chew, it's another thing. I mean, so how do you guys judge it when you're, like, getting something ready to bottle?
I think my favorite
by the masses we vote.
Yeah, we vote.
All of you?
Yeah.
You're involved too?
Oh.
No, you're not. Wait, she's got a refined palate, man.
She her vote counts twice.
High five. That's
awesome. I've also learned, to be honest with you, that I cannot even make a facial expression. If that boys freak out. Mom, what are you doing? I can tell by the way you're looking at this that you're not happy with it. So I have to say that you have to be very stoic the whole time you're tasting whiskey here. But I do think it's fair. We talked about this in the Barrel House, that what I think is amazing is that every individual human being has what they like and what they can taste. And the Huffs have developed a flavor. Rob will say, Mom's going to like this barrel, or she's not going to like this barrel. Dad's going to like this barrel, or he's not going to like this barrel. And it really assures the customer that when you're buying Liberty Pole, you're getting these very unique flavors. That's Liberty Pole from bottle 1 to bottle 10 to 4 years from now. My basic peated bourbon at 92 proof is going to taste the same across the board because we've learned each other's flavors. When we find this individual barrel that we really, truly enjoy, I think the customers have come to trust us that it is something that all four of us have agreed on that we think is absolutely amazing. So I think we have to trust not only us, but we have to believe that the consumer's way more educated than they've ever been before, and they know what they're drinking, and we appreciate that because they appreciate our art.
All people know what they like, okay?
Exactly.
So you guys started 8 years ago, right? I didn't get why you started yet. I mean, we could cover that just to finish up, but let's just talk about 8 years ago. That was not... You understood that... You probably were at a level of where you wanted to be consistent. And what she just described is how the whiskey palate has evolved and the industry has evolved. Where now we haven't, I wanted to ask you also, do you finish whiskey in barrels? Or yes? Okay, so that's one thing. Whereas 8 years ago, you finish a whiskey in a barrel and they tell you to shove it up your ass. That's not bourbon.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, I even know 4 years. Yeah. We're in our fifth season. 4 years ago, I tasted a finished bourbon and I had like hundreds of people telling me that finished bourbon isn't bourbon and what the hell are you doing? It's your, you know, it's like someone. Now finished bourbon is sought after and everything. But also 8 years ago, consistency. I come from the advertising industry, and there's a certain thing where when you would retouch and airbrush on photos, that was a hard thing to do to make these special effects, and you'd try and do it the best you could. Then when the computer came in, all of a sudden you could do it, and once you got done doing it, they didn't want to do it anymore. But like you said, talk about how where you started and what you were thinking to where you are now.
So consistency has always been a goal of ours. You know, the worst thing for a small distillery is somebody comes in and they buy batch 2 of your bourbon and they love it and they come back 6 months later.
They come back
batch six, and it's completely different, and they hate it. So we've always tried. We have what we call a house flavor profile, and we know what that is. But as a small distiller, you know, we're blending 3, 4, maybe 5 barrels. Very, you know, small blends. So it's harder to achieve consistency with that small number of barrels. So we've realized that, and our goal is it may not taste exactly like the prior batch, but as long as it's a little bit better.
But it's on profile.
Right, on profile.
Correct. And better.
And better. Better is, and better. And
yeah,
better.
As you get more aged stuff, it does get better,
the
right?
The main form of consistency we've been able to achieve is consistent improvement.
Yep.
Yes, that's
and
correct.
With that being said, it's all predictable, right?
There's always someone, place. Right? Yeah. Right? I mean, there's just no way that you're getting better and that guy's like, that's not what I tasted last time.
That last one had more oak.
Yeah, it's less.
Well, that's a completely different barrel size.
I will say, we tasted what, like 8 different things so far today.
Right? Yeah.
Total.
Yeah.
And if you were to taste it in a short amount of time. You can taste that consistent flavor profile.
There's definitely a house profile that is formed.
Even in the
higher
rise,
yes.
Or even in the smoky, peated bourbon, you can still taste that kind of, and it is very much a pot still.
So this was the rye, right?
But it is there, so you've successfully done that.
So this is like, this is.
Thank you.
This is minty.
Flavor profile that.
I think you can't succeed if you don't.
Correct.
Consumers are way too smart.
Well,
you
why
cannot
you guys? I always
got other places where we've tried 4 barrels, and I've been like, well, those couldn't be more different than if they came from opposite sides of the globe.
Right. Yeah. But you guys aren't
which
trying
is okay
to.
If you want.
You don't want to be Kentucky bourbon.
Oh hell
no!
It's like that's not what you're looking for. I mean, I respect the shit out of Kentucky bourbon. It's good.
Sure. Absolutely.
But that's not what this is. This is about you guys having. This is what the whiskey drinker. But you know, in the end, if you want the ultimate goal of whiskey, you got good taste, good flavor. But everybody's looking for, you know, feeling good. It does that. I can tell you, I'm feeling good right now.
Thank you. Thank you. Very healthy for you.
You know, I think that house profile, you know, and I think a lot of the, you know, the distilleries that I respect also have it. I mean, off the top of my head, Balcones. Texas whiskey. I love Balcones. I love their single malts. I love their Texas bourbon. But I think every Balcones that I've tried, I could almost tell you blind that that's a Balcones. If I didn't know it, there's something about their whiskey, and I think we have a similar profile.
It's fun to be able to pick out different, as you keep going into this, to pick out different, you know, flavor profiles. When I was doing my bourbon stewardship at Whiskey University in Lexington, and they did a blind, and I instantly knew it was Old Forester.
Yeah.
And I actually got in trouble for blurting out that it was Old Forester, that's 100, that's bourbon one, that's 1910, and that's 1920. And there she's like, did I ask you to say something? And it was, you know what I mean? So, yeah, I got mad. So, yeah, that's the kind of thing that I love, the fact that you can start to pick out flavor profiles. But once again, that just shows why you guys are doing some really good things in whiskey.
And it's really fun, from my standpoint, to have someone come in and go, this was our favorite single barrel, but really, I like this year of the 92, or not 92, but I mean, you know what I mean? Like, we like this particular peated bourbon, and it's really fun to hear the consumer love us and love certain years. So,
well,
it's fun.
Yeah, but see, to have favorites, there's no doubt. I mean, it's the same thing. Is it any different than Scotch? Or you know, people.
That's
will
what
talk
I
about
think
all
is the ultimate.
Or wine.
Yeah,
I mean, there's
the
great
same
years
as
for wine,
yeah.
And people don't understand. There's great years for corn.
Yeah.
There's some years the corn doesn't do as well. The crop is not as plentiful, and people don't just quite understand. You guys, what you can what you're distilling, they all think you're trying to distill out that, but that's vodka. That's the rum aspect. Getting that flavor, you know, you're eliminating the flavor. Whiskey is all about, as Alan Bishop says, respect the grain, and then you guys, the balance is to keep that grain flavor, but also pull the barrel flavor in, opposed to what Kentucky loves to do is just bring that barrel flavor in, you know, and there's reasons why, because, you know, it's column stilled and there's a lot of stuff that they got to get out, and that sweet spot, once they get that stuff out, it just gets better and better as you go further. So, all right.
Yeah, and I'm a single barrel lover. All right. I mean, even though someone says, oh, that's it. That's only one barrel. That's it.
I am with you.
I do. I'm like, that's, give me variety and all.
And all my best friends sitting around drinking that special barrel. Yeah. I'll never have it again.
Yeah, that's like, we try not to get too gimmicky with naming the single barrels. We don't want to, like, drive that, you know, like, right. We don't want to beat that horse to death. But at the same time, people really appreciate the insider. Hey, we've had our eye on this barrel for 2.5 years, and this has been our predominant thoughts on it. And we kind of want to guide you along the same journey that we've had with that particular single barrel.
With the single barrels. I mean, as an artist, okay, and as a podcaster, when I do something where I start editing video and putting video, by the time I'm finished, I feel like I'm old. It's old. Like, it might take 3-4 months to put it out. And, you know, the festival or where you're at, you were there 3-4 months ago, and you put it out, and it's like, old as hell to you. You know what I mean? But the people watching it, it's brand new.
Maybe ours are rushed a little too much. We're like
so it's not, oh my God. So it's, it never gets old where you got it.
That's awesome. Let's get it in the bottle.
But he's right. He's right again.
Yes, well, yes, most definitely, though. And particularly, we have one, though. We did a single barrel that we named Pecan Pie like 3 years ago, and it has been an absolute cult favorite. And this is probably the first time that I'll say this out loud, is amongst the staff here, it is far from one of our favorites.
The customers love it.
If you could
please find another. We have no. So we were moving from the old place to the new place, and I opened a bottle of mesquite rye that we had, thinking I just had 6 bottles of that, and I found 3 bottles of that pecan pie, and people are clamoring. I think we're going to donate it to charity. They are clamoring to get their hands on this one barrel that tasted like a pie, and everyone wants to know, what flavor did you put in it?
It was a small barrel.
It was just the wood.
All right, he's pouring one.
I got one more clean glass here, and this is actually my favorite whiskey.
That's really dark compared to what you've been.
I think I'm the only one in the family that would classify this as their favorite. It's a mesquite rye.
I'll be interested in hearing your flavor, how you like it.
Again, this is part of our ethos, right? Experimentation. So we like smoke. We like peat.
We got our hands on some mesquite.
We got smoked malt. And
there's some spice on that.
But
I feel like I'm smoking on a barbecue.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
There's even a Cajun.
It's not super overpowering.
This is the only time we've released it. We had one release. We have more in barrels over there, but it has my favorite long finish.
We put it out in March,
right when people were starting to think about outdoor barbecues,
So now I know why you like Balcones.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a Balcones. That's a Texas freaking bourbon right there.
Yeah.
Smoky. Yeah, there's a long finish.
You got any bottles of that left?
We don't.
But it's coming out. When's it coming out again?
When it comes out again, we're coming up because this is. When I'm smoking a brisket, I want to drink that.
Tiny, it's one of those barrels that's on the fifth floor.
You've got Cajun shit going on there, and you've got
all sorts of interesting.
You got paprika. I haven't said paprika.
I haven't said paprika.
Oh my God, you should call this. It's a bourbon, right?
No, it's a rye.
It's a rye. It's a rye. You should call this the rye.
Paprika.
No.
Paprika.
You gotta include the meat smoker. Just call it meat smoker rye.
Yeah.
Meat smoker rye, because that is exactly what I want to taste when I'm. Because I run my smoker is I use. I got to watch it the whole time. I don't use pellets.
You have an offset.
I've got a Smoky Joe. It's whatever, and it's great. I set it up, but you got to watch it. You got to add one time, and I love the smoke.
It's like running a sailboat.
Yeah, you can't smoke away from it.
Oh, that's why I don't like pellet smokers, because it's not like running a still. You just like you can just do it, and it adds the pellets and it keeps the flavor. I do like to watch. Because that day that I spend that 5-6 hours out there, I'm doing yard work, I'm doing other things, watching the grandkids. The whole time you're just getting this smoke flavor. And then in the end, the reward is great. And you know what?
If you don't light it on fire.
This is.
But that's not a brisket. I wanted you to try that because that's an example.
You got it.
I checked it at 4.5 hours, right? It was coming up to 5. I checked it. And then at 5 hours, it was completely gone. Like, it started on fire in the tinfoil. There was no fire. It just started because it was called a drunken brisket, which had I had poured beer in. So the alcohol eventually. Between four and a half hours and 5 hours, started on fire. It was really good for about this much. I peeled off all of it, and there was enough for one, like, her to have a serving and me to have a serving. It was delicious.
It's still really
we can turn this into a barbecue
really
podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you guys smoke meat?
Yeah, we do.
Oh, yeah, they're huge.
So, same thing. Freddie and Fred, I'll go over there, and Freddie loves this. One time we were doing a podcast with Sandy, and he's smoking sausages. They bring them in and put them in the oven, the last little part, and the whole place smells so good. I was dying.
You know, I think what we're leaving out here is
it's getting long now. we're at the hour I was going to do. Yeah, but no.
We're leaving out here is Jim smoking meat on the smoker, and I grab a glass of Chardonnay and I walk out onto the deck and I go, "What are you smoking, Jim? This is this in that glass." It starts out here. When you smell it, you get those grapey notes at the beginning that we have with our rye. That's so beautiful. And you get this grapey note, and then you taste it, and it's like you're standing there next to Jim smoking meat and tasting it. And
bringing meat up?
The wine and the smoke and the meat.
Yes, yeah.
Thank you. And then, as you say, you finish it with this gorgeous piece of meat, with this gorgeous taste, that is all in this glass. It is all in that glass, that moment.
No, it should come.
Of realizing.
I mean, seriously, I named it Meat Smoker Rye.
Yeah.
I'm with you. Cheers. You're really my taste. You could be a cousin. You might be, because we're semi-close in where we live.
From Ohio.
We're from Ohio. We're close.
Must be cousins.
We must be cousins.
We're originally from Ohio?
Marion.
Okay.
Marion. His mom was born and raised in Kansas.
Yeah.
So I have to say, when they say Ohio is the fourth largest bourbon buying state, I have to say, well, of course. What did you expect? We know.
That triangle between Cincinnati, Dayton, and Columbus.
Is where it all
so
is.
I'm in Canton. OHLQ is now concentrating on Cleveland. Cleveland is not a big bourbon drinking area. Canton is where it kind of starts. But I can walk around Canton all day long and nobody knows who the hell I am. I go to Springfield or Dayton or Columbus and they know me. That's how big bourbon is in those, and then you got Cincinnati, which is basically Remus's town. I mean, then you go across to Covington, and God, Covington is fantastic. If you guys get a chance to get down to Covington, Brad Bonds does Revival, and all he does all day long is Dusties. He goes around and picks up all the Dusties at his place. I couldn't believe it. I walked in, he knew who we were. It's like. He's got 50,000 people following him on Facebook. And all he did was just start pouring me, 1940 Stitzel Weller, Old Turkey before it was Old Turkey. And I'm like, well, how much? She's like, no, dude. You're here. I mean, that's what bourbon's about, right? Yeah. People come and taste your bourbon and just love
it. And having a good time. I totally agree. Totally agree.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
Don't be strangers. Don't be strangers.
Well, 2 hours.
2 hours is easy.
Oh, yeah. We won't be. I hear about a good release. We're coming down.
And we'll save some for you.
That's
great. An honor.
All right, everybody. Thanks for watching on Facebook. We're the Scotchy Bourbon Boys. www.scotchybourbonboys.com. Come down and check out Mingo Creek Distillery. Liberty Pole Spirits. Fantastic whiskey that rye, bourbon, peated bourbon, bourbons. Everything we've tasted has been spectacular. And then make sure that you follow us on Instagram, YouTube, and Twitter, or X. And then also all the major podcast formats, YouTube also. And remember, good bourbon equals good times, good friends. I think that we started some good friendship here, and it was all around bourbon and bourbon balls.
I was going to say, pass the bourbon balls.
Yeah, they're there. And then make sure that you live your life dangerously. Little Steve-O is going to take us out.
Show me the way to the next whiskey bar. Oh, don't ask why. Oh, don't ask why. Show me the way to the next whiskey bar. Oh, don't ask why. Oh, don't ask why. For if we don't find the next whiskey bar, I tell you we must die. I tell you we must die. I tell you, I tell you, I tell you we must die.
So how do you feel about a sample of all four cocktails? Just a sample, you can try all four?
I'm all for it.
Hey, Scotchy Bourbon Boys fans, this is Alan Bishop, Indiana's Alchemist of the Black Forest. So I'm tuning in here today to tell you all about the One Piece at a Time Distilling Institute channel on YouTube. If you're at all interested in the art of distilling, whether it be home distilling or professional distilling, and the intense geekery that goes into that process, then check out the One Piece at a Time Distilling Institute on YouTube. I promise you're going to learn something you didn't know before about the arts.